Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, making headlines after a recent conference of GPs of the Irish College of General Practitioners, the focus was on the inability of many practices around the country to secure a legacy in terms of a successor to keep the practice going. And one doctor was quoted widely in the media in Carras, Aveen and County Kerry, Dr. Kieran O'Shea, who's been in practice for 36 years, looking after the people of that area. He's now in a position where he wants to retire. But the problem is that he can't source a successor, with people being faced with exceedingly long journeys if they can possibly access a GP practice in some of the other surrounding towns. Indeed, his namesake, Dr. Brendan O'Shea, is a regular contributor to this programme. He's an extremely busy GP, and if he hasn't enough on his plate, he's also spokesperson for the Kildare Faculty of the Irish College of General Practitioners and Assistant Professor for Primary Care at Trinity College Dublin. Good morning again, Brendan.
Good morning, Ken.
Thank you for joining us. Now, this issue will puzzle many people because people will say, how come and why is it proving impossible for GPs to get successors, to people to take over the practices or to come into the practices? Is it particular to rural areas only?
The two areas we've identified are rural areas and deprived urban centres. And the needs there are actually quite pressing. Is the glass half empty? Is the glass half full? It's half full. We're recruiting 250 trainee GPs onto the national training scheme this year. There were over 400 applicants for places, which means that young doctors coming out of medical schools absolutely view general practice as a really attractive, rewarding, and I mean professionally rewarding, branch of medicine to get into. We have 4,000 GPs and around 2,000 general practice nurses in the system. If we were staffed to the same level as the NHS, it would be closer to 5,000 GPs and 4,000 practice nurses. So the glass is half empty.
Right, let's start. Just let me hold you at that point. Let me start at source, our medical schools. If there is a shortage of doctors, you know, coming, emerging from the system, and we know many of them are emigrating and taking their, you know, expertise elsewhere. But is there a case, or is it possible then, that the standards, the academic standards applicable to students based on their Leaving Cert results, are they too strict, and is it time to expand our medical schools?
We already produce more doctors per capita than almost any other country in Europe. That is not our problem. Our problem is retaining them. They come out of medical schools, they turn into interns. We recruit a lot of international medical graduates into our medical schools, and there's a big cash flow attached to that. The international medical graduates tend to have to go back to Singapore, to Canada, back to the UK. We educate them all over the world. And then the remaining proportion go into our hospital system, and this really is where there's incredible intractable difficulties. And it's not due to a shortage in academic standards. Our Irish trained doctors are welcome all over the Anglophone world. It's their experience largely at the hands of HSE as a dreadful employer.
Okay, I want to come into you again on one point, and sorry, I just need to take this in stages. So, Brendan, if we are taking in all those students from abroad who are then hightailing it back to their own countries to practice, is there a case then that we might have more what's called positive discrimination in favour of Irish students on the basis that they're more likely to stay here?
Yeah. No, and they're not. And that is the issue. If we could even retain the number of Irish students through their immediate postgraduate years, we would have more than enough. Now, that brings us to this morning's conversation, which is not about the whole health system. It's particularly about rural practice. It's about, in Kildare, it's about, is there a GP still working out of Castledermot or Brownstown, for example? And I don't believe that there is. So let's go to Kildare just for a moment. And in Kildare, we have our own strengths and our own weaknesses. And a weakness we have, and among ourselves, the Kildare Faculty of the ICGP, we understand that we've got great GP training practices throughout Kildare. but we still have difficulty retaining people. We've got a very good cooperative, so we look after the out-of-hour stuff quite well from a work-life balance perspective. But our problem is there's a Cinderella effect, that if there's a young GP, and it's three-quarters likely to be a she now, he or she, if they've just qualified, they are likely to drift towards the bigger urban centres. Well, look, I might as well enjoy all the amenity of the leafy suburbs of Southside Dublin as opposed to going to rural Kildare. That's exactly where we are with this. Some other issues, the glass is half full. We've lots of people wanting to do general practice. The numbers on the national training scheme are going up year on year, and the college is working closely with the HSE on that. But 700 of us are due to retire over the next 6 years, 700 of the 4,000. And the 700 who are due to retire are predominantly, they're more likely to be men. They're more likely, well, to be a little bit workaholic. Younger colleagues coming into practice are far more keenly aware of work-life balance. They're more likely to be women. They've worked incredibly hard and long to get where they've gotten as a fully trained GP. Some of them did a degree before going into medical school. Mm-hmm. They've spent 4 to 6 years in medical school, a year's internship, and the shortest way they can get to general practice is going straight on to the national training program.
How long does that take?
That's another 4 years. So what you have is you've got incredibly hard-working younger female colleagues, and the prospect of going into a single-handed practice at exactly the same time that their family life is quickening, and they're often mothers of young children, that's actually quite a big ask. So this really is what we need to be considering. Now, the glass is half full. What does the evidence say about this? The evidence says some very interesting things for the people of Kilkee and Castledermot and Nurney and Brownstown. The evidence says that if you can encourage, and we've got a lot of Leaving Cert students who are very prominent these days, but if you can encourage younger people in rural communities to go for the jobs that you want, there's a better probability that a greater proportion of them will come back to Castledermot and Kilkee and Nurney and set up. But you've got to make that conscious effort. So in general practice, it's not just about GPs. It's about general practice nurses. It's about general practice technicians. It's about assistant practice managers. It's about practice managers. And these are all very valuable. They allow us to do more so that it doesn't rotate. So this is how we can...
All right, let me something that strikes me there. Many GPs in very busy urban practices, for example, like your own and others and that, will say, listen, we are overrun here. We have too many patients. We can't facilitate anymore. You know, we have got to get some sleep time ourselves, and I appreciate all of that. On the other side of the coin then, in rural practices, if things weren't so demanding, I would view that maybe as I can have a more sedate lifestyle as opposed to in a busy rural practice where I'm run off my feet with people just in and out the door every minute of the day. So it begs the question then, is remuneration, money, got anything to do with it?
I don't think it's the main thing. It's not the main issue. The main issue is the type of professional demand. And I suppose our workload gets tricky for three reasons. Sometimes we're dealing with very complicated acute issues that creates stress. Sometimes we're dealing with very high volumes to an extent that actually seems existentially unfair and usually unsafe. And then thirdly, sometimes it's simply the very long hours. And when you go into a rural practice, sometimes there are lulls in the day, but you're never off call. You are first on call for every accident, for every trauma, for every acute medical condition that's generating. So that creates its own burden in terms of long hours. Now, we have different solutions in play. The cooperatives, which were introduced in the late 1990s, were a huge factor in helping us to attract people into rural practices. But at the end of the day, it particularly relates to numbers and having the right mix. So we do need to continue to grow the numbers in the National GP Training Scheme. In the nursing establishment, we really need the nursing schools to switch on to general practice nursing more. And certainly a well-trained GP nurse can do 70% or 80% of what a GP can do, and it's a less expensive solution and it's a faster solution.
Right.
You can grow practice nurses quicker than you can grow GPs.
I can well appreciate the fact that, if I might use the term with the greatest of respect, the old style GP, and there was one I attended who retired in the last 2 years, and I won't mention his name not to embarrass him, the man was a saint in terms of his availability, but it was an availability, and we often chatted about it, of 24 hours a day, which involved house calls, being called out of your bed at 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. And you alluded to a fact, Brendan, that there was a generation of GPs, you know, who undertook that and did that level of commitment because that's what it said on the tin. But the modern cohort of young people have a very different view in terms of lifestyle. And when I say young people, I would say the typical GP nowadays, in terms of who is not approaching retirement or whatever else, wouldn't tolerate that situation anymore because it would be untenable to be available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Well, here's part of the problem. They're not all the same. Some of them are young men, some of them are young women, some of them are, they're in the next decade, they're in the 40s, where the demands of small family life are a little bit less. And really, we've got to be able to speak to all of them. Now, some great solutions that came out of the Wonka Rural GP Conference in Limerick last weekend. Gerry Crowley, who's the lead of the Rural GPs group, is absolutely calling for a virtual university or a virtual campus. And it's now less expensive and easier to do this than ever before. But what we're looking at is we're looking at building a stronger online community of rural doctors, to bring them the kind of training that makes them more resilient, and would also have a secondary function of linking them all together. And a really pressing issue, a really pressing issue for the single-handed rural GP is holiday time. They cannot get locums. None of us can, but if you're in a three or a four doctor practice, you can cross cover, whereas if you are in Castle Dermot on your own and you are hanging out for your 2 weeks holidays, you will tend to get let down by locums, or it's just impossible to get locums. So the online rural faculty or rural university, and again, in terms of where this might happen, it might happen in UL, in the University of Limerick, because the professor of general practice in UL is Dr. Liam Glenn, and he is a GP in Ballyvaughan, population 262, but he employs himself and six others, and they provide very comprehensive general practice-based care. So the glass is half empty, it is half full. To any young people in Kildare out there, do come in and have a look. General practice is it is still an absolutely fantastic career, either as a GP, as a general practice nurse, as a GP technician, as a practice manager. And there's an awful lot happening in terms of how we deliver care.
Because, Brendan, while the focus of this conversation has been you and your colleagues, male and female, of course the implications are enormous for the end user, the patients, and particularly those who can't get appointments now, who can't get access to even getting on a GP list.
Well, this is a growing issue for us. It's becoming acute. The HSE has the right to assign additional patients to all of our lists, and we can understand why that has to be. But then that creates a demand and safety issue at the practice level. It's a very interesting space. It's very important. We need to think our way through it. We certainly have the thinking. We've got the research. We've got the training. We have a lot of the bodies. We need more flexibility around career and career support. And I think if we do the right things, I think we'll get ahead. Now, one last thing I would say from the glass half empty side of it is that if we don't fix this, you can have as many hospital beds as you want, but they will all be flooded with work that should be done in the community. So if we don't get the primary care piece, and at the heart of primary care is general practice, if we don't get the primary care piece right, which is less expensive than the hospital piece, but if we don't get the primary care piece right, the hospitals are absolutely doomed. The casualty departments will continue to be flooded with heart failure and COPD that could be managed in communities, but is drifting in to casualty departments because of a lack of GP capacity.
And if I might infer from your closing remark there, that implies resources and more resourcing to be put into the system to create the kind of supports around GPs, to create more positions and the supports around GPs within those practices that Brendan has been articulating. Dr. Brendan O'Shea is a Newbridge GP, as you'll gather, spokesperson for the Kildare Faculty of the Irish College of General Practitioners, who held that major conference at the weekend, and he's Assistant Professor for Primary Care at Trinity College Dublin. Brendan, thank you for setting aside the time, as you so generously do for us here on KFM, from what is your own very, very busy practice as well. Thank you and good morning.
Take care.
All right, so hopefully, folks, that'll have brought you a better understanding of the pressures on the system, why they're there, but unless, as Brendan has articulated, those situations are sorted out over the coming years, well, I think it's going to get worse, isn't it?
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
Okay, we're going to move now to Councillor Fintan Brett of Fine Gael. He is of the NACE MD. Good morning, Fintan. Fintan, I know a few of your other councillor peers were on speaking about this issue. It was on the steps being taken or proposed to be taken to alleviate the arsenic contamination on the Kilteal Group water scheme. And a time frame for the same. We heard from Bill Clear, we heard from Anne Breen. Carmel Kelly didn't touch on it yesterday, but is there anything you'd like to follow up on it?
Well, really, I think what the other councillors have said, they've pointed out what's happening. There's three processes ongoing at the same time. Number one is the possibility of treatment for it. Now, my understanding was that because of the cost involved, wouldn't be a runner. But at the last MD, the Director of Services said it's not completely ruled out as yet. The main one that we're really concentrating on at the moment is the geological survey, and the people up there are engaging with experts to draw up the terms of reference for the survey, because this survey is going to cost, I would estimate, in the region of €25,000, and this is going to decide whether or not a new borehole can be established to maintain the supply in the area. Failing that, and the third item, which we all really are looking at how to overcome the cost involved in it, is the mains connection, because Irish Water, while they do, the Irish Water Department and Council, everybody is engaging, the Federation of Group Water Schemes, there's great engagement there, but the elephant in the room is the couple of million perhaps it'll cost to get this supply up to Kilteal, and then you have 8.5 kilometres of the distribution mains in the area, which Irish Water have clearly said that they won't be funding, and they also say that they will not connect into supplies that go through private property. So you can see the many and varied issues that the people have up there to try and get a solution on that. So I suppose between us all, we keep our fingers crossed that this geological survey will come up with some tangible results.
Okay, Fintan, we're going to move on now to road issues. First, you asked the council about the upgrade, or to upgrade the broken signs. That's on the slip road north of Kill Village. It's from the roundabout at Junction 7 to the roundabout at Junction 6.
Yeah, there's a couple of signs along there. One in particular, there's a few poles, and there's a sign at a 45 degree angle for a couple of years there, and some of the people said it's along there have said, look at it, and I agree with them, that maybe a run along there by the council to tidy them up wouldn't go astray, and to be fair to them, they said yeah, they will get it sorted out in the next few weeks, so that's positive.
Okay, you also asked for an update from the council on the installation of a ramp or other specific traffic calming measures. This is adjacent to the entrance to Whitewell or Whitwell Estate in Nace.
It's the Whitewell, yeah. This is just the Nace side of the Piper's Hill campus, and we all know the amount of houses has gone up out there. We have on the left, as you head towards Nace, is the new Whitewell. On the right is Bellingsfield, and we have a pedestrian exit there, and we have a main entrance there, and we have speeding. The road a couple of years ago was narrowed here, but as we all know, there is a certain amount of people who think the rules of the road does not apply to them. And while we have the Garda unit out there with cameras and that, and they've detected some speeding on it. The bottom line is, from some residents there, is that it's continuing, and because we have that junction and we have children crossing there for school, we need some action to be taken there to slow down the traffic really at that area.
Fintan, you also asked finally for an update on the installation of a ramp again or other specific traffic calming measures. That's at Toberton and Johnstown.
Yes, again, it's not dissimilar, although on a much smaller scale. Toberton is a new small estate on Toberton Lane, just outside Johnstown here, my own village. And we have a small road coming down, a steep hill, and the road where the estate is has been widened and upgraded with lights. And we have a situation where the traffic coming down, when they see the good road, they incline to the speed. But just at the beginning of that are two exits, one from Parnas Wood and one from Toberton. And the council, a few years ago, I put in an application there to put up signage, and that's gone up. But unfortunately, it's not doing the job it's supposed to do. And again, unfortunately, it looks like a ramp is the only thing that will slow down the traffic there.
Okay, Fintan, thank you for the time this morning. That is Fine Gael Councillor Fintan Brett of Naas Municipal District.
Okay, let's go to the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District then, and Independent Councillor Ida Cusson is on the line with motions and issues that she brought forward to the recent meeting. Good morning, Ida.
Good morning, Owen.
Just before we talk about the motions, a brief reaction to the news over the weekend of the announcement of agreement between Kildare County Council and the parish of St. Patrick and St. Bridget in Selbridge and Strafford to purchase the parochial house and lands on the main street in Selbridge.
Yeah, the most briefest thing I could say is that it's absolutely fantastic news. You know, we needed a site, we needed money, funding, so we have both, it seems, right now. We're enough to get on with it. So it's going to provide an absolutely fantastic facility for the people of Selbridge, rolling down to the Liffey. Sure, you couldn't get a better site. And I know I would have contacted KCC when I saw changes in that the parish priest was announcing in relation to the convent and to the houses there. I made a number of those contacts. I also spoke with Father Joe on a number of times to see what was happening, is it happening, and just how soon will it happen, that kind of thing as well. So
okay.
Delighted to see it has progressed to this, and really look forward to this happening for us all.
Okay, did you get a time frame on the rollout of microchipping dogs? This is a pilot for the Selbridge Leixlip MD.
Yeah, do you know what? Like, in fact, the response was a bit negative initially, but that was just maybe a bit of a misunderstanding, because this has been going on since 2019 when it was agreed at plenary that we would, as a council, give out some free microchip and run it perhaps in line with buy your licence and getting your microchip free at the same time, just a small number of them, because as responsible dog owners, we are required to have a licence and a microchip. Other local authorities are doing this. And actually, I've been told they will revisit it and work out a scheme to do with me in the coming couple of months. Yes.
Okay, what is the Kitchen Caddies campaign? Because this was something else that you raised at the meeting.
Yeah, there again, we're looking at waste food, as you know, to waste food seems an awful sin in this day and age, but it's more than waste food. It wastes your land, your water, your energy, transport, you've methane, you've CO2 emissions, you've pollution, you've hunger, you've climate change. All that stuff happens when you have waste food. What do you do with your waste food? We are actually required to segregate our waste food from every other waste matter, not just your recyclables, but it can't go into landfill either. So the average household wastes about €750 a year on waste food, believe it or not. Even a tenner a week that you might throw the few crusts of bread and the bits of potatoes into the bin does actually add up substantially. Mm-hmm. So we need to engage, encourage, educate, that kind of thing. And there's nothing like a small freebie like a kitchen caddy. It's a small little compost bin to keep at your sink, maybe put your waste food into it. Start the process if you're not already doing it, and get on the programme of segregating your waste food.
Okay, and finally then...
We will be doing it.
Good stuff. Finally on this one then, Ida, can the council confirm what bring banks in the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District are accessible for use by wheelchair users?
Yeah, and sadly none, but that's not unusual across the country. And
what is a bring bank, first of all?
Yeah, the bottle banks, we would all typically call them, but they've moved on. Some have other things. You can bring cans or maybe clothes, just different kinds of ones. But your bring banks, typically, they're operated by a local authority. You can access the site. Yes, you can if you're in a wheelchair or you have a disability, but you won't actually be able to access the receptacles to put your recyclables into, because a bit like a playground, that you can access, but there's nothing for you to pay when you get there. So we had a lovely story from our access group, and I give credit to Miriam from the Maynooth Access Group there. She has a library of toys and books called Our World, and all the toys and all the children in the books all have a disability. So there's a Lego Man toy in a wheelchair in Legoland. He goes and he puts his recyclables into the recycle bins.
Very
and
good.
A child who was viewing the library in the school setting said, how come we can't do that really though, you know? And from that, we need to have what they term eco-ableism now, and that's another word, okay. New word now, but eco-ableism. So there is one in South Dublin County Council. Kildare County Council will look at that, and maybe through our strategic policy committees, we can look to be a driver for that in Kildare.
Okay, on that note, independent councillor on the Selbridge Lease Municipal District, Ida Cousin. Thanks, Ida.